Rare is it that one of the most popular bands in the world visits Charleston, West Virginia. But that's exactly what happened the afternoon of April 28, 1991, when REM performed on West Virginia Public Broadcasting's nationally syndicated Mountain Stage with Larry Gross. Hi, I'm Nathan Thomas, and this is A Big Band Comes to a Small Town, REM on Mountain Stage at 25.
There's a spring in the mountain and it flows down to the town.
While we'll go into detail about the importance of the show, perhaps it could be summarized best by Larry Gross's introduction that afternoon.
But to start us off, we have a group from down Athens, Georgia, whose latest record is called Out of Time on Warner Brothers Records. And they fit all the qualifications that we have here on the mountain stage. They're talented, they're innovative, they're entertaining. They're not afraid to change when their artistic instincts tell them to. Plus, they have one thing that most people who appear on mountain stages don't have, and that is about 10 million fans. Would you welcome REM?
With 2016 being the 25th anniversary of that appearance and the Out of Time album, the band is celebrating with Out of Time, 25th Anniversary Deluxe Edition reissue, which includes the mountain stage performance in its entirety for the very first time. We've collected memories to create this look back to that historic weekend for Charleston, West Virginia. Later, we'll hear from people who were in the audience that afternoon, and also from mountain stage creators Larry Gross and Andy Reinauer. But we'll begin with veteran music journalist Annie Zaleski, who wrote the liner notes for the reissue, who explains why in 1991, REM decided not to tour behind the album.
So I think REM decided to take a breather as 1990 rolled around for a variety of reasons. For starters, they had just been on the road almost for the last decade pretty consistently. I mean, throughout the 80s, their pattern was release a record, go on tour. Their tours were also pretty extensive. If you kind of look at their archival tour dates, they were very long tours and they were pretty grueling. So I think they just kind of wanted to take a little bit of a break and change things up a little bit.
Despite the extensive touring hiatus, the band did make three public appearances to promote the album: NBC Saturday Night Live, MTV Unplugged, and Mountain Stage, the only ticketed event of the three. Zaleski explains how different of an environment Mountain Stage was for the band compared to the other 1991 shows.
What was interesting about having the Mountain Stage show next to Saturday Night Live and Unplugged is that each of them were slightly different. Saturday Night Live, I think, was the more traditional, hey, we're promoting the record, we're promoting our singles, we're going to go out there and, you know, do the late night TV thing. Unplugged was very similar in that it was also, you know, it was filmed for MTV, so they were very specific about what they wanted to do and how they wanted to present the music. What's always struck me about Mountain Stage then, and then also kind of looking back at it now, is just how joyous and loose it was, you know? I mean, I think it's a cliche to say, well, REM was getting back to their roots, but they were sort of getting back to their roots as, you know, just kind of a band hanging out, playing some music together, having a good time, having their friends. I mean, Billy Bragg and Robin Hitchcock were there. So it was just a really kind of celebratory, almost low-pressure experience.
Zaleski says that appearing on the show allowed them to be in a small-town environment, which they thrived in, while also reaching a worldwide radio audience.
I think West Virginia's location as well, too, because, you know, it's off the beaten path. It's kind of similar to where the band's from. The band's from Athens. So REM was really kind of at home. But what was also nice about Mountain Stage was that they recorded it, so it was broadcast to a lot of other places. So they didn't necessarily have to go on tour. They could be in this one place, you know, record and play this wonderful concert, and then it was sort of disseminated to many other stations. So everyone could hear them, and they could reach all their fans in other cities.
Radio, I can't hear it. When I got to the house and I called you out, I could tell you had been crying. It's that same song on the radio that makes me sad.
For those who were there, the weekend has become a time that holds a special place in their memory. We've collected pictures and video, which can be viewed on wvpublic.org. We've also talked with members of that April 28th, 1991 audience. We'll start with Mark Wolf, a Charleston, West Virginia photographer who had good word from Mountain Stage band member Michael Lipton that the show was occurring.
Well, my initial reaction was disbelief. I have had different experiences of bands being announced that they were coming to Charleston before, and unfortunately, those experiences were not to come to fruition. But this time in particular, I had on very good authority that they were. My good friend at the time, Michael Lipton, who's still my good friend, he told me that they were indeed coming. They would be playing a set on Mountain Stage.
Joanna Tabbitt, a lifelong REM fan from Charleston, West Virginia, and now a circuit judge in the city, recalls waiting in line to get tickets to the show.
I can't remember how it was. I actually heard that they were going to, REM was going to be coming. You knew that tickets were going to be very difficult to come by, but I was committed to getting them and was successful in securing them. I think they went on sale. I want to see, maybe the tickets were on sale in February. And it was a Sunday morning. I do remember that. And I was actually pretty good at securing tickets. And I attribute that to my friend John Nelson at Budget Tapes. You know, they would typically open up at 10 o'clock, and if you were among the first in line at 10 o'clock, you knew you would get you knew you would get good seats. Obviously, you didn't have to be the first person in line for this, because it was going to be an open seating type arrangement, as I recall it was. So you knew you wanted to get there early. It was cold, it was rainy, but it was fun because you actually knew a lot of the people who you were in line with. They were, you know, your friends and obviously fellow fans.
Nick Paquette, also an REM fan from Charleston, who found the band in high school with the release of their album Life's Rich Pageant, thought that the setting made the concert all the more exclusive and intimate.
I mean, it was unbelievable. I had never seen them at the time either, and them being my favorite band, I was always looking for opportunities to be able to see them, and then for this to just land in a city that I was living in, such a special event, just the buzz was unbelievable. There was a lot of excitement.
Not all audience members were from West Virginia. John Collins, a lifelong resident in the Boston, Massachusetts area, knew that the sparse appearances would be must-see for any diehard REM fan.
I think REM did a good job of letting people know that, they weren't going to tour for a little while after basically being on the road for all of the 80s. In fact, Peter Buck played with Robin Hitchcock and the Egyptians at a small club near Fenway Park called the Paradise Theater. And there was an article in the Globe the next day, and I remember his quote saying, "We're going to be like the Archies. We're just going to stay home and make records for a while." So actually there were three things with the Out of Time release. They did Unplugged, they appeared on Saturday Night Live, and then the Mountain Stage Show. So I had a friend who had a connection, so I got to go to the dress rehearsal of the SNL appearance, and then my friend who made it down to West Virginia with me, she had some connection because she was working for Warner Electra Asylum at the time, and she got to see the Unplugged show. So between the two of us, we covered all three of their appearances in 91. So she was able to get on the guest list for the Mountain Stage show, and, it just became a debate as to whether I could take the time. I needed to take that Monday off. I remember the show was on a Sunday, and obviously since it was a long drive from Boston, I'm glad to say 25 years later, they said, you know what, one vacation day isn't really going to make a difference, but I'm sure I'll remember the show for a long time. So, we hopped in my 88 Pulsar and drove the 16 hours. I had never been to West Virginia. I remember we stopped somewhere, maybe 10 hours in, and we thought we were close. And of course, this is the days before, GPS and all that. So all we had was triptychs from AAA, and we thought we were close. We stopped someplace to get gas and something to eat, and they said, "No, you got about another 6 hours to go." And we didn't believe him, but he was right. We probably didn't roll into Charleston until probably like 2 or 3 in the morning. I think we had a B to the venue probably around noon. So yeah, we didn't get much sleep, but again, all worth it.
Drains the last of warm beer from the can.
The song you're listening to now is by a band who had a connection to REM. Joanna Tabbitt connected these dots when she saw that the Dashboard Saviors were performing in Charleston, West Virginia the night before. And, well, I'll let her tell you all about it.
And I can tell you, I told my friends, and this is the kind of stalkerish person that I was, the band, the Dashboard Saviors, who was playing at that bar, Till Daddy's, that night, was an Athens, Georgia band. And they played there periodically, and we'd gone to see them before at that same venue, that same bar. And I knew that Peter Buck was friends with some of those fellows. And I'm like, look, if they're in town, if REM is in town for the Mountain Stage Show, and this band is playing here, they're going to go see them. You know, logic serves that would happen. So we knew that, well, that's a place we would ordinarily go anyway, and that's a band we would ordinarily see, and I'll bet they'll be there. So today, take cameras. So it's not like now when everyone has smartphones and can just whip out your phone and start taking pictures, you had to be a little bit more calculated about it then.
It was at Tilt Daddy's that Tabbitt had an encounter with bassist Mike Mills, who appeared to have been at Watt Powell Park, a minor league baseball park in the area, earlier that day, as he was sporting a Charleston Wheelers ball cap.
Yeah, he was just sitting there by himself, and he really did look like a yokel if you didn't know who he was, because it was relatively early in the evening, you know, and he had his Wheelers cap on, and no one was talking to him. So I sauntered up, and I said, I know you're Mike Mills, and welcome to our fair city. I can't wait to see your show tomorrow. Of course, I'd seen them several times previously by that point in time, but I was really looking forward to seeing them at Mountain Stage. And I said, congratulations on the new CD. I really like it. And he goes, well, you know what? I'll let you buy me a drink. And I did have a good quip, and he laughed and said, you know what? You sold about 2 million CDs. I think you can buy me a drink. And he did.
We're on the BBC today. We're being broadcast over Radio 1 BBC. I'd like to say hello to all the folks over there. I thought I would introduce him because it's this time of the year, with a little quote. One that April with his shortest sota, the draught of March had pierced to the rota, and bathed every vein in sweet liqueur, of which virtue engendered is the floor. Roughly translated, that means, would you welcome for the first time to the Mountain Stage, Mr. Robin Hitchcock.
At that time, live performances of Mountain Stage occurred at 3 p.m. rather than the now standard start of 7 p.m. The line began to form early the morning of April 28, 1991, at the Capitol Theater in Charleston. During the wait for doors to open, Robin Hitchcock appeared outside to entertain the growing line. Nick Biquette was in that line.
That morning, you know, I mean, we just couldn't wait to get up and head down there. Got there a few hours early, and just, you know, it was just electric, just waiting and being in line, and just it was amazing. We were in line, I remember, and I didn't see him come out. Just all of a sudden, I was just talking to people in line, and all of a sudden I looked to my right, and I mean, literally about 10 feet away, he had I guess there was a kid studying in line, because we had been there for a while, so he was studying. And all of a sudden, Robert Hitchcock had his textbook and was just reading out of it. And I mean, just like it was Shakespeare. I can't remember what it was, what the book was about. But I mean, he was giving it his all. It was entertaining.
Mark Wolfe recalls that the performances outside the venue were just as memorable as what would later happen inside.
It was a mathematics book, and he made up a song on the spot based on the description of a mathematical theorem. So it was an incredible event outside the theater as well as inside that day.
As for the show itself, Biquette vividly remembers the set list, relaying that the venue made it all the more special.
You know, I was looking forward to hearing anything, particularly old stuff. They, you know, they came right out and started with World Leader Pretend, and Losing My Religion was huge then. I mean, that's what really blew them up, and obviously they played that, and Radio Song was really good. And then the song from Life's a Treasure, Don't Fall on Me, is still one of my favorites. That was really great to hear live. But just the small venue, just it being so exclusive, and just how special it was, and you knew it was going out live to fans all over the world that would have loved to be sitting in your seat.
Though REM was the marquee act, Wolf says that the audience loved every moment of the show.
The whole house just absolutely reacted to each musician just as enthusiastically as REM. And that's what I remember. I just remember the warmth both from the artists and also the audience. It was a real give and take that day.
John Collins notes that the long drive from Boston was well worth getting the unique mountain stage experience.
Obviously, they were doing stuff off of Out of Time. They ended up doing Radio Song twice, once during the broadcast, and they played a few songs after the broadcast had ended, and so they did Radio Song a second time. They did Disturbance at the Heron House, which is my all-time favorite REM song. I remember Michael singing with Billy Bragg and Peter playing with Robin. And then at the end, I think it was the last song of the broadcast, they did, everyone who had performed that day got on stage. They did Get Up and Have You Ever Seen Dallas from a DC 9 at Night. I remember REM got a plaque or an award of some sort from the governor of West Virginia, and they declared that date as REM Day. And they seemed really touched and pleased by that. They, just everyone was in a great mood, great spirits. It was, you know, a little bit loose and a lot of fun with, you know, everyone sort of playing with their band or solo as the case may be, but then mixing it up a little bit and the all-star jam at the end. It was just, it was a lot of fun, and definitely glad I did it.
Collins remembered that then-Governor Gaston Caperton, First Lady Rachel Warby, and Larry Gross declared the day, April 28, 1991, as REM Day in the state of West Virginia.
Whereas Rolling Stone magazine called REM America's most resourceful rock and roll band, and
whereas REM has selected Mountain Stage for one of only three appearances following the release of their latest Warner Brothers LP, Out of Time, and
whereas tickets for REM's April 28, 1991 performance on Mountain Stage sold out within 15 minutes, and
whereas REM has demonstrated significant support for public radio, both on the local and national level, by their appearance on Mountain Stage, now therefore,
we declare today
REM Day.
Buy the sky and sell the sky. Tell the sky and tell the sky. Don't fall on me.
Now let's move from the audience to behind the scenes with a look at the REM show from Mountain Stage host Larry Gross and executive producer at the time, Andy Reinauer. We'll start with Gross, who recalls an earlier visit with an REM band member.
Peter came with Kevin Kenney and did a duo thing, and at that time, it must have been 1990, Peter said to me, he had a good time afterwards, and he said, this is a great show, it's a lot of fun, I'm going to bring my band back sometime. And I said, great, that would be wonderful. And of course, I thought, that'll never happen.
When Burtis Downs, REM advisor, who grew up in Smithers, West Virginia, contacted the Mountain Stage office later that year, Reinauer couldn't believe it.
It was August of 90, the first time Burtis called, and I didn't know Burtis at that time. And when he said that they wanted to have REM on the show, I thought it was actually somebody probably playing a practical joke on me. But I went along with it and said, sure, we'd love to have REM on the show, And I said, you know, what time period were you looking at? And he said, they weren't sure yet. And I said, well, give me a call back and you have more details. And that was pretty much the first phone call. again, I thought it was more of a practical joke. And that, then I went to Larry and asked him about REM, and that's when he said what he said. And sure enough, Bertus called us back about a month later and said they wanted to do the show in April. We started working on the plans from there.
Gross immediately knew that they had to have the band on the show.
I don't ever get those calls because I'm not in office. Andy was in the office, and I actually remember where I was standing. I was going towards the studio, and Andy came up to me and he said, would you like to have REM on the show? I thought he was joking, but I deadpanned, and I said, yes, Andy, I'd like to have them on the show any time of the day, any day of the week. So just tell them if they want to come 2 a.m. on a Tuesday, we'll make a show for them.
It was important to the band, who were fans of the show, that the show did not change drastically for their appearance, though they did make recommendations as to who they'd like to appear alongside.
We had a format in those days where the band that was going to close the show also opened the show. And some of the acts did two sets. Most of them just did one, except for REM. So they opened and closed. They said, no, we don't want to do anything different. We want you to do the show just like you always do it. So we said, great, perfect. We asked them, do you have any suggestions of acts? And they suggested Billy and Robin as possibilities. We said, sure, we'd love to have them on anyway. They were on our radar. And then we knew Gregson and Collister. They'd been on before, so we put them on too. That REM didn't know them, I don't think, but they liked them once they heard them. So we had it filled up. So funny enough, it was all British acts except for REM. Later, the BBC ran the show on Boxing Day.
Here's Reidenauer on the subject.
There was a lot of work leading up to getting it done because we had a great relationship with Warner Brothers Records prior to that, but they were the label of record at that time, and they had a lot of discussions with us about what they wanted to do for the band when they got there, and in terms of their what they perceived to be REM's comfort needs. And the whole time we're also talking to Bertus Downs, and Bertus is just telling us the guys in the band just want to do the show the way we do it, and that they didn't want any extra attention or et cetera. And that's the way the show came off.
By then, Mountain Stage made the Culture Center Theater its home. But for REM's visit, they decided to move it back to the Capitol Plaza Theater.
When Buck did the show with Kevin Kenny, it was at the Capitol Plaza Theater. And so in our discussions about the venue, I can't remember if it was us or them that suggested we go to the Capitol Plaza Theater. We had mentioned to them that the Capitol Plaza Theater was sort of on a chopping block. We didn't know if it was going to be around. So we decided to go back to the Capitol Plaza Theater, that we would make this a fundraiser for Mountain Stage. We were going to charge the exorbitant price at that time of $20 a ticket, which we had never done. It had always been, you know, a family ticket was $5 back then, or admission was $3 for a single person. And REM agreed to, you know, go into back into that theater and try to do something to help support the theater and make it something worthwhile for Mountain Stage.
Tickets for the show sold out quickly, though many of them went for resale at higher prices.
They said, I saw an advertisement in the Columbus Underground paper offering $1,200 for a ticket to REM. I said, tell them for $2,500 they can host it.
While many were eager for the show itself, a few were waiting for it to finally be over with, including the front desk staff at West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
2 weeks leading up to the show, the phone at the office never stopped ringing. And this is before we had direct lines going to everybody's desk. Everything had to come through the operator at the front desk. I don't think anybody was more happy to see that show produced and done and moving on to the next one because the phone calls stopped.
When the national broadcast had ended, the band agreed to perform longer for the audience in the theater and the statewide radio network.
And then we told them, you know, after the show is over, the 1 hour is over, you can play as long as you want for the audience that's there. But then we also, I didn't know they were going to make the executive decision just to keep it on the radio here in West Virginia. It wasn't going to go national any longer, but it would be people here got to hear it. We just kept it on, which was a smart thing to do. And then they had a lot of fun after the show with playing a song with Billy and, you know, Stipe and Billy saying hello in there. And there's a lot of songs they got people up to sing. And it was Stipe's choice for the finale to do Dallas, Jimmy Dale Gilmore. I'm glad he did, and it was a lot of fun. And everybody else sang along. You know, basically it was they were leading, but everybody sang along. And at one point, toward the end of the whole thing, I think I was standing backstage, and I said to their road manager, I said, you know, hey, you want me to go out there and say this is enough now? Because they've been out there a long time. And he looked at me and said, when Michael wants to stop, he'll stop. And I said, okay, it's his crowd. I understand that. So, and another great thing was when everybody sang along on End of the World as We Know It, right? Right.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. I feel fine.
For Ryan Hour, his duties of warming up the crowd before the show were easier than usual.
There was such an energy and a roar from the audience, even when it was silent. You could just feel it. To walk out onto that stage, and I was doing the audience warm-up, and it was palpable. You know, when they cheered, or we asked for the spontaneous cheer on cue, I could feel it pushing me back while I was standing on stage.
Though the band has not physically returned to Charleston, West Virginia, their relationship with Mountain Stage did not end following that April 91 afternoon.
Most people don't know that for some time, and I don't know whether it was a year or as much as 2 years, Michael Stipe wrote to me with suggestions of people he thought would be good on Mountain Stage. And that's the first place I heard of Vic Chestnut. And I would have kept putting Vic on every 2 years as long as he was here. Sadly, he's not here anymore, because he was also a very interesting man and a sweet man. But I liked his music a whole lot, and that was a wonderful introduction, so I appreciated that.
Reidenauer notes that while pressure was high, the staff did not falter.
It's probably one of the biggest things we've ever done. You know, we've taken the show to Glasgow, Scotland, and had some other big productions. But in terms of the media exposure and the pressure on us to do it right had never been greater. It's never been greater. And the Mountain Stage folks pulled it off.
The show was a milestone for Mountain Stage, putting it in its biggest spotlight, helping move the show forward.
We started in the late 80s putting contemporary, kind of what would be now called indie rock or indie pop bands, along with more acoustic, folky things and country things. We mixed that. That was something we started earlier. But what REM did was put us on the map. We were a show in West Virginia that was distributed by NPR and had 100 stations or whatever we had back then. And people knew about us, of course. Some did, some didn't. But all of a sudden, boom, everybody knew who we were for a moment. And that doesn't go away. Once you're known by somebody for something, then, oh, if it's a positive thing particularly, then it's great for you ongoing. Then acts that we wanted to get in the future, we make an offer to them, and we said, you know, oh, you're the show that REM came on. Well, of course, that's going to help us out. Suddenly, we're somebody. And that's useful when you live in a little place like West Virginia, where by and large, people assume the worst. They assume you're not going to be, you know, competent, professional, whatever. And then they say, well, wait a minute, why did this band do this? And it really opened the doors for us. That really did open doors for us that put us on another level.
Gross remarks that the eclectic nature of REM's music matched the nature of the show, and that no other band could have given them a moment like REM did.
It was a great experience, and it was a fun experience. And it was, you know, we were so young and so inexperienced that it wasn't as scary as it probably should have been at the time. Didn't perceive how big it was until retrospect. It was a much bigger deal than we thought. But we still, I'm proud we didn't change our chops, and we didn't change our spots, and they didn't ask us to, which I really appreciate. I'm grateful for them coming on, very, very grateful for the band and for their management and everybody, the way they came in, the way they treated us. and the way they performed. They were great, of course. They're a really great band. And they showed that right there. And they did it, you know, acoustically, semi-acoustically, and showed that it really doesn't make any difference. They could do it electric. They could do it acoustic. It works great. And it really did shine a spotlight on us for a moment. And some of that leftover spotlight has been great for us. And I think they kind of symbolize, too, the kind of thing we like. We, you know, they had tremendous respect for a lot of different kinds of music. Otherwise, you wouldn't think necessarily Stipe is going to pick a Jimmy Dale Gilmore song as his favorite to do. But he knows a lot of music. They did also the Dan Penn song, Dark End of the Street. I mean, soul music, country music, that's what Mountain Stage is. It's all of these things. And REM, even though they're known as the kind of one of the archetypical indie rock pop bands, and they're very contemporary, and they were very ultra hip and trend-setting, et cetera, and so forth, but they have great respect for all of these other kinds of music. And like what Stipe sent me wasn't just indie-sounding things. It was all kinds of things, some very traditional. So that's kind of what we've done on Mountain Stage, and therefore I'm really glad that what we had, the biggest boom we had, was made by a band like that whose artistic integrity I think is fantastic and is right up there with anybody. We're so grateful to have been able to do this show for so long. I have no idea how long it's going to last, but I've said that for 30 years, and I hope that I can say it for another 30 years. I hope that it continues after I'm gone, because we're trying to do something based on a principle of trying to have some integrity, and sometimes we get it wrong, but it's not because we're trying to get it wrong. We're trying to bring people, listeners, respect their intelligence, bring them something we think is really good and that's worth their consideration. Otherwise, they may not like it. You can't make everybody like everything, but at least, just like Stipe did to me, send me these things and say, "What do you these could be good." That's what we're trying to do.
Have you ever seen Dallas from a DC-9 at night?
REM's performance from April 28, 1991 on Mountain Stage can be heard as a part of the ALF Time 25th Anniversary Deluxe Edition reissue, where it's available commercially for the very first time. For more information on Mountain Stage, including upcoming performances, podcasts, and more, visit mountainstage.org. I'm Nathan Thomas. Thank you for joining me as a big band comes to a small town. REM on Mountain Stage at 25.